unique young man, and we see God working in his life in ways that are very instructive to us. Joseph is one of those individuals in the Old Testament that is a picture of Christ. There are many parallels between the life of Joseph and the life of Jesus Christ and the things that have taken place, and those are instructive to us. We want to just allow the Lord to teach us some specific things in this particular passage, and I've entitled this message, "It Takes More Than Just Saying No." Genesis chapter 39, and we'll read the first 20 verses. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything that he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything that he owned. From the time he put him in charge of the household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything that he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her and even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." And he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed, and when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until her master came home, and then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave that you brought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Never before in this country has sexual immorality been so promoted, so encouraged, not to mention modeled, by high governmental officials. The children in our society have been brainwashed about safe sex and other lies that go along with it, while at the same time they've been coached and tutored in techniques of promiscuity. The very idea of sexual abstinence has been scoffed at and called irrational and unachievable. The opposition gives no particular reason for opposing sexual purity, except to say it doesn't work. The truth is, they're unwilling to face the issues that cause it to work. Now, those who promote abstinence often push the slogan, "Just say no. That slogan by itself is not enough. It will not work. A simple negative admonition, no matter how true it is, does not give the kind of motivation that is needed for a person to deal with strong temptation. We can never have consistent victory over temptation unless there is a very strong element of positive commitment and unless there's a resource of personal strength that does not normally reside within the human being. In other words, we need supernatural enablement. We need God's strength. As we look at the life of Joseph and issues of temptation, we're basically focused on issues of sexual temptation. But the principles that we find here work in every area of temptation. So we trust that as we study this passage, the Lord will teach us. Joseph provides us with a terrific example of lessons that we can learn, and three in particular stand out. One is, you and I are as strong as the purpose of God. Just as strong. You and I are as effective as our commitment to God, and you and I are as secure as the faithfulness of God. When we're faced with temptation, we often feel weak and even helpless. But that is part of the lie. The lie is, you can't do it. You are absolutely helpless. You're going to fail. That is true. We are weak and helpless if we're operating independently. And that is always the assumption of temptation, and that is, you are on your own and you can't make it. Well, of course, we're not on our own. If we're in the plan and purpose of God, we are with Him. In the purpose of God, we are immortal until God has accomplished His purpose. Nothing can touch us, nothing can hurt us without His permission, and nothing can defeat us without defeating Him first. He stands before us. Now, as we think about the purpose of God and the strength that we have in His purpose, we have to recognize that the purpose of God includes temptation and testing. As God is in the process of teaching us and building us up and making us like Christ, He gives us tests. He never tempts us. Temptation is the tactic that Satan would bring to tear us down. And God allows it only because He is able to use it as a test to build us up. Now, in Joseph's life, God had given him visions of victory. You remember He gave him several dreams. And in the dreams, it was obvious that he was going to be victorious. And yet, God then allowed him to be sold into slavery by his brothers. God had promised Joseph through his dream that he would have position of power. And yet Joseph found himself like a hunk of meat to be bought and sold and used. Now how is a young man with this kind of experience going to understand what in the world God is doing? This is one of the really important things in learning from Joseph, and that is Joseph, unlike some of the other Old Testament saints, did not get a lot of special revelation. Joseph had to deal with the promise of God in the same way that we do. When you and I face a tough situation, we know two things. One is, this is a test. God intends to use it to build us up. At the same time, it is also a temptation, and Satan intends to use it to tear us down. If you know that and you understand that, you make your choice as to who you're going to follow, who's going to work in your life. Now, the other question, of course, that Joseph had to be asking was, is God going to give me some kind of encouragement? Is God going to give me some kind of comfort or hope in this situation? And much like us, God is simply saying, I've already given you enough encouragement. I've already given you sufficient amount of assurance. Joseph was taken into slavery, sold by his brothers, and the Ishmaelites went a caravan headed 250 miles down the dusty road to Egypt. As nighttime approached, the caravan would camp beside the road and sleep. Joseph, of course, is bound hand and foot. Joseph is not very sleepy. Joseph is thinking. Joseph is remembering what's happening at home. Joseph is missing a lot of things, and there's no question in my mind that Joseph is remembering a lot of what went on in his life. And without any question, he remembers the story that his dad told, how he slept beside another dusty road. He was running for his life because his brother Esau was very angry with him, and he sleeps beside a dusty road. He pulls up a stone for his pillow, and he has a dream. If I pulled up a stone for my pillow, I would have a dream too. But he had a unique dream. This is from God. And the dream is, there's a ladder from earth to heaven. And angels are going up and down the ladder. And at the top of the ladder, God is speaking to him, and he says this, I am with you. I will watch over you wherever you go. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. I know that Joseph remembered that. And what comfort. Now this has been tremendous comfort for Jacob when God told him this, I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised to you. And Joseph knew that was true for him too. And you and I know that's true for us. I'm not going to leave you until I've done exactly what I told you I would do. That's the character of God. It doesn't change. So while Joseph did not know exactly why things were happening the way that they were happening, he did know who was with him. He did know in whose presence and under whose power he was working. Because you see, this situation was included in God's plan. God is in control. Not only does the purpose of God include testing and temptation, but it includes his presence and his power. I will be there with you. I will enable you. Now, God has promised to be with us because he knows that we need strength beyond anything that we can muster up. He doesn't always assure us of his presence by some kind of special revelation. What he wants us to do, in fact, what he expects us to do, is to trust him based on his promises. I've promised you. Now I want you to trust me. I don't want you to wait for some kind of special revelation. I just want you to trust me based on my promise. And then watch. Watch to see me work. When I'm doing something, recognize my hand. Recognize my work. When something good happens, don't thank your lucky stars. There aren't any stars bringing you luck. There aren't any victims of bad luck either. There is no luck. When somebody's in control, there's no luck. You probably remember the old song that they used to sing on Hee Haw, if it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Well, if you believe in luck, sometimes that's exactly the way you feel. Put yourself in Joseph's place as he's standing on the auction block. They're going to sell him to the highest bidder. What are you thinking? Who's going to buy me? How lucky can I get? Now, anyone who thought that it was luck that Potiphar bought Joseph didn't know whether it was good luck or bad luck. You say, look, Potiphar is buying him, and Potiphar is one of Pharaoh's key men. That's good. That's good luck. Potiphar is also responsible for all the public executions. It's not just good luck. It's bad luck. I mean, one mistake and your head rolls. As it turned out, being bought by Potiphar was very good and very bad, depending upon how you look at it. When he came into Potiphar's household and ownership, God kind of fueled the fire. What he did was, he began to bless everything Joseph touched. Joseph was the most effective slave that this man had ever seen, and God prospered him. And one of the things that we found out from watching Joseph is, and this is a really important lesson for us to learn, and that is, prosperity, true prosperity, does not indulge us. Don't you get that? True prosperity does not indulge me. We are more vulnerable to temptation when things are going good than when things are going bad. In times of ease and blessing, we have greater problems than we do in times of hardship and adversity. With all the pain and all the struggle that it takes to gain victory, it's still easier to gain it than it is to keep it. While we're fighting for victory, if we get bumps and tears and bruises, we say, so what? Once we get the victory, it's very hard to maintain it. And the reason is simply this. We tend to take the victory and indulge ourselves with it. Like, well, now it belongs to me. I can do whatever I want to with it. And so when the blessings of God come, we tend to take them to ourselves and become indulgent. And that's not prosperity. We let temptation then take the form of something that we deserve, something that is good, rather than temptation being something that is evil and something that is destructive. See, it's all how you look at it. The key to Joseph's prosperity was the simple word, the Lord was with Joseph. That's the key to prosperity. But the most telling factor of how this shaped Joseph's life and how it prepared him to deal with temptation was the fact that the prosperity did not make Joseph rich. Joseph was still a slave. All of the prosperity gave abundance to everyone around him, but it did not make him personally rich. What it did was it gave him greater responsibility and a greater challenge for growth. You've had that before. A new title, a new position, more responsibility, no raise. Right? Great deal. That's exactly what he got. No raise. Just more responsibility, more to do, less time to do it in. But the other thing about it was, his attitude as a servant did not change. When we prosper, when we really do well, our attitude as a servant generally changes. We deserve better. One of the reasons that God is not able to prosper many of us is that because we use it to indulge ourselves. And when we do, we lose the servant's heart. And God is not willing to do that. Now this is very important for us to learn because when we are servants, it's easy for the power of God to become evident. When Joseph had no resources except his hands and his feet and his brain, and God blessed him and prospered him beyond what was possible, it was obvious God had done it. Joseph never had to tell Potiphar, "The Lord is with me." He never had to tell Potiphar, "The Lord is prospering what I do." It was obvious. He could not miss it. Sometimes our witness is all word. We want the heathen around us to know that God is real, and so we tell them instead of showing them. Potiphar had seen a lot of slaves in his day. He had never seen a slave with this kind of confidence. He had never seen a slave with this kind of attitude and dedication. And he'd never seen a slave with this kind of effectiveness. He was impressed. Now, interestingly, remember, all of this is coming from a young man who was the privileged son of a doting father. Jacob, as far as I can tell, did almost everything wrong that you can do in raising a son. But he did something right, too. He loved that boy. And somehow in his love, there was communicated a sense of responsibility so that Joseph responded by being an obedient young man who had a great sense of responsibility and a love for his dad that gave him that. You don't have to be a perfect parent to be a good one. I mean, Jacob demonstrate that you can do a lot of things wrong and still be a good parent. And he raised a kid who was a submissive son with a servant's heart. And that was exactly the guy that God could use. Very few things, I didn't think about this until I read this passage, but there are very few things that are impressive as a person's work habit and their attitude toward authority. You watch somebody's work habits, and you watch their attitudes or authority, and you can tell an awful lot about that person. Either very good or very bad. Well, Potiphar had a ringside seat, and he could see a tremendous attitude, a tremendous response to authority, in spite of the fact that he was in a really tough situation. I mean, the guy's a slave. He's been snatched out of his home and sold, and he's lost his ability to operate with his own will. I have no question at all in my mind that somehow, I don't know exactly how he worded it, I don't know whether he probed or whether he asked very directly, but Potiphar asked this young man what made him tick. Listen, I'm getting ready to entrust everything I own into your hands. I want to know what you're made out of. Why do you do what you do? Why are you so different? He had to ask him that. And it had been very natural for him to tell about God appearing to Abraham. Abraham's a rank heathen. Called him out of Ur of the Chaldees. Said, just follow me. I'll take you. Just trust me. And then Isaac. And then his father Jacob. And then he was able to say, and I'm a servant of God, and this is what it means to me. The reason I serve you well is because I'm serving God. And you had to tell him that. The man had to know. What does that do to a person when they hear that? Well, Potiphar did not understand it. One thing he knew was, I can trust this young man. Whatever it means is serving God, I can trust him. And what we learn from Joseph is that you are as strong as the purpose of God. When the presence of God is in your life, when the power of God is working in your life, you've got the strength of God. Well, the other thing that we can learn from him is that we're as effective as our commitment to God. We can not only assume that temptation is in the purpose of God, but we can also assume that temptation is unavoidable, and we're going to have to be effective. There's no way to avoid temptation. It's inevitable. The only real question is, what form will it take? How will you face it? One of the things that we know from Scripture is that no temptation that comes to any of us is unique. Others have faced the same thing. It just wears a little different face, a little different coat. In Joseph's case, Infidelity was the issue. Infidelity is predictable if you put all the right pieces in place, or if you put all the wrong pieces in place, as the case may be. And the pieces in this case were a busy husband, a neglected wife, an available, handsome young man. Potiphar had gotten to the point where it was obvious that he could trust Joseph, and he had everything into his hand, with the one exception, he wanted to know what he was going to get to eat. He wanted to have a part in making up his own menu. Beyond that, he left everything up to Joseph. Potiphar evidently was climbing the political ladder with Pharaoh, ambitious at his work and pretty much uninvolved in his home, which left his wife neglected. Without question, she was probably a beautiful woman, a man's man in power and position. He could get who he wanted. Beautiful woman. A beautiful woman is used to getting attention, not being ignored. She's now lonely. She's unsatisfied. And here is an available, handsome young man. Joseph was a kind person. He was thoughtful. He was had a great physique. He was what the teenage girls would call a hunk. He was the epitome of the hunk. Probably, we don't know about the date in Joseph's life here, but he's probably about 26, 27 years old by this time. And what we see is a home that's falling apart, and Joseph being pulled into that kind of web. A strong bond of love and commitment in your relationship rules out anything invading. In other words, if you have a bond of love and commitment in your relationship, husband and wife, and that is renewed and strengthened on an ongoing basis, there's not going to be an invasion from the outside. It's when everything is kind of left to go its way, and there's a lack of attention, a lack of love, a lack of commitment, then the temptation really comes into the picture. One of the things that we learn from Joseph is it's possible to win the battle before it ever begins. We just recently celebrated D-Day, the beginning of the Nazi downfall, and there was a memorial service there at Normandy, and many of the soldiers who had participated and gone up the beach at that point were there, and we heard some of them talking about what they had gone through. The historic battle was fierce, and it was won on the beach at the cost of a lot of lives, precious lives. But the most strategic part of the victory was accomplished before any boat ever left the port. It was in the planning and the preparation and the strategy that was laid. If that had not been done, there wouldn't have been victory on the beach. The battle, hard fought, was strategically won before it ever started. One thing you know, it can be lost before it ever starts. In this case, it was won. Well, Joseph found himself in an unavoidable situation of temptation. There was nothing that he can do to change it, but his ability to deal with the temptation was forged ahead of time. What had already happened inside of Joseph prepared him for what he was going to be faced with. You see, Joseph had committed himself in a relationship with God. He was committed to purity. His life was committed to the Lord to please him. And this was a sin that would make would be a direct offense against God. He said this, "How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? There's no way." See, that decision had been made beforehand. So when it came to the temptation was fairly easy to deal with. He said to her, "Do you understand that your husband trusts me? Do you understand that your husband has committed to me everything that he owns? And he's given into my hand everything but you. If he trusts me, he is going to be able to trust me because I'm committed to him. Now those are the words of a slave coming to his master. Every meaningful relationship is based in love and trust and respect. But it has to be sealed by commitment. If there's no commitment, there's no relationship. I don't care what the other parts are. Joseph was able to just say no because the presence and power of God were real in his life and because every important relationship was sealed by commitment. He was committed. Now those who tell us that abstinence won't work and they scoff at just say no are being honest when they say it. They believe that it will not work. And the reason they believe it will not work is because they have no clue about the power of God or the power of commitment. If they understood the power of God, they understood the power of commitment, they'd never say, saying no won't work. But commitment is a very rare commodity in our society. We do not have a nation of committed people. We don't have a society that really understands commitment. Most everything that used to be based in commitment is called old-fashioned. The modern way is to have no commitment of any sort. We call it freedom. The Bible calls it sin. Our homes are weak because of this. Half of every marriage turns out to be divorced. Why? No commitment. Before you're married, you plan how you're going to split things when you divorce. No commitment. Our churches lack commitment. The result is weak fellowship, weak discipleship, weak outreach, and a very weak reflection of Jesus Christ to the world. Because there's no commitment. Ask me to do anything. Maybe I will, but don't ask me to do it twice in a row. Ask me each time and give me a chance to say no each time. Don't ask me to commit myself to anything on an ongoing basis. That's the way we live our life. The only thing that we plan into our life is no commitment. But commitment and submission to God is what makes us effective in resisting. This priority of commitment is throughout Scripture. We quote, "Resist the devil and he will flee from you." That's just say no and it will work. It won't. That scripture begins with, submit yourself to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. That'll work. You see, if there's commitment and a relationship with God that's alive, you can resist the devil and he will run because he's not running from you. He is not afraid of me and you. But he can't hold a candle to God. And the only way God has freedom to work in our lives is if we're committed. If we're not committed, he has no freedom. Not only can we win the battle before it begins, but we can win the battle in the midst of it. It was important what happened on the beach at Normandy as well as what happened in the planning rooms in Great Britain. Oscar Wilde, the Irish poet, once wrote, "The only way to get rid of temptation is to yield to it." And most people believe that. The pressure of temptation comes and comes and comes and comes and comes and comes, and the only way to get rid of it is to give in to it and get past it. And acceptance of that twisted philosophy leaves the paths of our lives strewn with litter and wreckage from our shame. Joseph resisted the appeals of Potiphar's wife. And he resisted, and the next day he resisted, and he resisted. But one day came when resistance was not enough. One day, when he went into the house to attend to his duties, none of the household servants was inside, and she caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." And he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. That's exactly what Paul told Timothy. Flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. In other words, you've got to have something you're going toward as well as something you're going away from. The picture that comes to my mind when I read that passage from Paul where he says, flee youthful lust and so forth, is the picture of the farmer sitting on his screen porch, and he's got 12 cats, and there are 12 little holes in the screen porch for them to go out. And one of the guys said, why didn't you just make one hole? He said, man, when I say scat, I mean scat. Well, when God says flee, he means flee. You know, get out of there. You don't wait. There's a very good reason for running. Sometimes we think running means you're a coward, you can't take it. Running means simply this. Joseph is just like you and me. Joseph knew that if he stayed around long enough to get emotionally involved, he wouldn't have a chance. See, temptation works that way. You and I can sit here right now and we can say, how many of you think lying is wrong? Everybody thinks it's wrong. How many of you think cheating is wrong? Everybody thinks cheating. How many of you think lust is wrong? Very easy. But when you start approaching the situation, it becomes very personal. You get very emotionally involved. Not that hard to lie. Not that hard to cheat. Not that hard to... See, you cut down the distance and get close enough. You cut down the objectivity and get emotionally involved, and suddenly what was so clear isn't clear anymore. And the strength that we had becomes vulnerability. And if you play with temptation, you're going to lose. Guaranteed. You play, you lose. Joseph lost his coat, but he kept his integrity. The second time this kid lost a coat. Just can't hang on to a coat. Both occasions, he lost it because someone was filled with rage. And they snatched it off of him. And in both cases, he ended up losing his freedom. At least for a while. So the coat comes off and you can hear Joseph saying, here we go again, Lord. And you can almost hear the Lord saying, and you are as secure as I am faithful. Your security is as certain as the faithfulness of God. What's going to happen to me? You're going to trust me and I'm going to be faithful. Yeah, but I mean, what's going to happen? You're going to trust me and I'm going to be faithful. What else do you need to know? And God does not give Joseph any of the details. And he usually doesn't give us any of the details. He just gives us a promise of his faithfulness and says, trust me and I'll handle it. And I can do it. God is even able to fulfill his purpose through the wrath of men, in this case, of a woman and a man. She was very frustrated, she was very embarrassed because she had been rejected, and her passion was turned into hostility. Her desire for romance became thirst for revenge. And so when Potiphar came, she dumped the story in his lap that she had made up. And he felt very betrayed. You can imagine he would feel betrayed. Here's a young man that he trusted. He was betrayed. He was angry. He was enraged. And he threw Joseph into prison. And Joseph never grumbled. Joseph never felt sorry for himself. Why? How did he do this? Joseph was exactly where God wanted him to be. Joseph had been obeying the Lord, doing what he was supposed to do, had a heart of commitment to God, trusting him, being as wise as he could in what he was doing. So he was where God wanted him to be. And if God wanted to put him in prison again, so he put him in prison again. A prison's no fun. But if that's where God wants you to be, there is no other place to be. You don't want to be outside if he wants you inside. So he could rest because he knew that God was in control. Now, there's one little tidbit that is mentioned here that kind of blows the cover on what's going to happen. And that is, he says, he was put in prison where the king's prisoners stayed. In other words, he was taken and put where Pharaoh's political prisoners were kept. He was one step deeper in adversity, but he was one step closer to the palace. And that's where he was going. God had already said, I am going to send you to the palace and you are going to rule this nation. If I happen to send you by way of the prison, that's my business. Listen, you don't go in the front door of everything. Front door is dangerous sometimes. And God said, look, I know exactly what I'm doing. I've already given you a preview of what's going to happen. The sun and moon and stars are going to bow down to you. All the other sheaves are going to bow. Listen, you are going to be a person of power. You are going to be a person who is reverenced, who is respected, and who is able to do whatever needs to be done. And prison just happened to be the route that he was going to take. Would you take that route? Would you take any route that God chooses to get you where he wants you to be? That's the question Joseph had to answer. And Joseph said, here I am. And if we're smart, we'll do the same thing. See, God has a purpose for us. And all he calls us to do is trust his faithfulness. And not gripe when we don't know exactly where he's doing what he's doing. We don't understand what he's doing. It's not what we were planning. It's not real comfortable. Is he accomplishing his purpose? Do you have to understand it? No. Then his power is going to be perfectly free to work in your life. And this young man impacted the world. This young man was the instrument by which God saved his entire family and nation. And he'll use me and you in the same way.
Lord, I want to be like Joseph. Steadfast in faith and hope, though not yet in a place where all details are known and praises come forth. Let me learn to trust, Lord, in this my in-between moment, even if it means one step deeper in adversity will be needed to bring me one step closer.